House will come to order. Then clerk will call the roll.
Barker, Barnhart, Berger, Beyer, Bonamici, Boone, Boquist, Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Gerard, Gelzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, excused, Burley, excused for business of the House, Shields.
Flags Lou will be led by Representative Greg McPherson.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic of which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The opening ceremony will be presented by PSU Jazz Trio, Kyle Williams playing guitar, Brian Myers playing saxophone, and Patrick Carey playing the bass, and they are guests of Representative Mary Nolan. We can be seated.
Thank you.
That's the PSU Jazz Trio. I would like to have you all here this morning. Thank you so much. Courtesies, representing Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Please join me in welcoming Ken Madden of Madden Industrial Craftsmen. Ken's visiting the chamber today with a bunch of the business partners of Portland Community College. We've been hearing testimony in the higher ed committee about how important the relationship is between the community colleges of this state and their business partner. Ken is here arguing for PCC to expand its manufacturing, building, and construction industries in the area because the demand for skilled workers continues to increase, and the relationship between our businesses and our community colleges are extremely important. I urge you to extend the courtesies of this chamber to Ken Madden and his friends from Portland Community College. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative Escobar.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, we have four honorary pages today up from Southern Oregon. Southern Oregon delegation is very proud to introduce them. They're from Washington Grade School. First one is Derek Betzel. Derek. He's from, of course, Medford. He's a fifth grader, age 11. He goes to Washington Elementary. He likes math and PE and basketball. He's part of the Kids Unlimited student government and Community 101. And his career goal is to have the biggest dirt bike shop in the world. Next is Johnny Lawson from Medford, age 12, sixth grade, Washington Elementary School. Plays football and basketball. Student government and Community 101 is the school organizations he's part of. His career goal is to be president of the United States. Next is Joseph Castile. Joseph comes to us from Medford, age 10, grade 5, Washington Elementary School. Community 101, Student Government, and Kids Unlimited is his organizations. He wants to be a lawyer or a judge. Last is Cameron English. Cameron comes from, is age 9, 4th grade, Washington Elementary School. Student Government and Community 101 is his organizations, and his career goal is to become a firefighter. Welcome. Oh, we have one more. Excuse me. We have Choli Christensen from Medford, age 11, grade 6, Washington Elementary School. Organizations, Community 101 and Student Government. She wants to be a pediatrician.
Thank you, Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Along with the good representative from Albany and the good representative from the Santiam Valley, I would like to welcome some students who are visiting here today from Lynn Benton Community College, and they're up here in the side gallery. They include Cosmo Prindle, J.J. Quinlivan, William Parker, Stephanie Olson, Caleb Leonard, Jamie Wilson, and Tammy Paul. And Tammy is the Director of Student Leadership, and J.J. Quinlivan is the Student Government President. And President Rita Cavan was also here with them today, and they came to help us learn more about the community college budget and some of their needs for infrastructure to support enhanced workforce development, particularly in the science and healthcare industries. So please join me in welcoming them and thanking them for their good work.
Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A couple of courtesies. First of all, I want to give my personal thanks to the jazz ensemble from Portland State for their entertainment and in our opening ceremony. It was wonderful to sit here and listen to them this morning. And I'd like to welcome people from Portland State here for Portland State Day at the Capitol. And also, Mr. Speaker and colleagues, I would like to introduce an honorary page who is serving us today. Katie Jenicke is here today from the Odyssey program at Hayhurst School. Good morning, Katie. Katie enjoys math, science, the drama club, and yoga and skiing. Her career goal is to become either an engineer or a marine biologist. Good luck to you, Katie, and thanks for helping us out.
Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'm very excited to introduce my honorary page, Evangel McVicker, who is waving to us, and she's an eighth grader, age 13, at Odyssey School, which is a history magnet school, and her favorite activities are school play, team captain, for fencing, music, and babysitting. Also, I think we've got a rival here for the good representative from Ashland. She's the stage manager and actor for Portland Theater, Northwest Children's Theater. Her career goals is to work with orphans in poverty-stricken countries. And welcome and thanks for being here today as my page.
Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm sorry I wasn't more efficient. I didn't have this information. We have in the gallery a group from Finley Elementary School, a great elementary school in my district, a great but very crowded elementary school in my district. who are here visiting with the leader of the group, Candace Strove. There are 150 third graders in the building today, and I hope when you see them, you'll welcome them anywhere that they're around the building. Thank you guys very much for coming to visit us. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further courtesies. Messages from the governor.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the governor to inform that it is approved to sign the following bills, House Bill 2128, 2130, 2164, and 2192.
Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the president to inform that the Senate has passed Senate Bill 5, 697, 734, House Bill 2268, 2290. Passed the following House bills as amended by the Senate. House Bill 2079, 2384, concurred in House amendments and repassed Senate Bill 83. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the president to inform that he has signed House Bill 5007, 5017, 5039, 2047, 2091, 2142, 2148, 2157, 2159, 2163, 2165, 2161, 2207, 2227, 2248, 2249, 2271, 2279, 2281, 2282, 2286, 2292, 2312, 2313, 2343, 2355, 2356, 2358, 2360, 2364, 2365, 2367, 2368, HGR 7.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2222 relating to employer safety committees. House Bill 2233 relating to sex offender reporting. House Bill 2401 relating to public employee retirement. House Bill 2490 relating to escrow agents. House Bill 2541 relating to business license tax imposed on license of real estate agency. House Bill 2867 relating to dental hygiene and declaring emergency. House Bill 3414 relating to county fair boards.
Bills read second time or passed to third reading. Consent calendar. Clerk will read the first bill in summary.
House Bill 2423 relating to contested case proceedings. It modifies notice required to be given to party before contested case hearing.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2423A. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Thatcher votes aye. House Bill 2423A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill in summary.
House Bill 2507, relating to disposition of human remains, makes persons arrested for or charged with criminal homicide of individual ineligible to direct disposition of descendants' remains.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2507A. Those with opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Dingfelder, how do you vote? Dingfelder votes aye. House Bill 2507A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2119, relating to proof of vehicle registration.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2119A. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2119A prohibits the display of registration plate or registration sticker on a vehicle other than the vehicle for which the plate or sticker was issued. House Bill 2119 is aimed at closing a loophole for those who are intentionally attempting to evade the license registration fee payments and detection by law enforcement for swapping their plates around. You may be surprised to learn that it's not currently against the law to put a registration plate on a different vehicle than the one for which it was issued. It is, however, a Class B traffic violation to alter a registration plate, and House Bill 2109 adds the illegal display of registration plates or stickers as a similar violation, carrying a fine of up to $360. Transportation Committee amended the bill to provide necessary exceptions for vehicle dealers who use dealer plates on multiple vehicles and to allow for the application for fleet registration stickers for plates as long as the expiration dates of the vehicles registered actually do have the primary date for the vehicle fleet. House Bill 2109A has been amended in committee by a couple of amendments to accommodate those folks and comes to you with a unanimous recommendation of the Transportation Committee, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Butler, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And clerk will open the voting system. Representative Dallum, how do you vote? Dallum votes aye. Representative Dingfelder, how do you vote? Representative Dingfelder votes aye. House Bill 2119A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2127, relating to victims of juvenile crime.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2127A. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2127A comes to you from the Judiciary Committee with unanimous support and from Attorney General Hardy Myers. This bill conforms the Juvenile Code with the Oregon Constitution by adding references consistent with the constitutional rights of crime victims at various stages of juvenile proceedings. It does not seek to expand or enhance those rights, but rather to clearly articulate in the Juvenile Code the rights that exist in the Constitution. It does so by making clear what rights victims have and who is responsible for ensuring that the victims are given notice and opportunity to participate where appropriate. Let me mention briefly the three key areas of victims' rights that the bill articulates. First, victims are afforded the right to be heard. This means that the district attorney or juvenile department must ensure that victims are informed of their rights and provide with information on how to exercise those rights. Second, victims have the right to be heard at critical stages in juvenile proceedings. This means things like being present in court, being consulted on plea bargains and accountability agreements, and having access to transcripts. Victims must also be notified in advance of these events. And third, victims' rights to privacy and safety are also added to the Juvenile Code as required factors for consideration by the court, the juvenile department, and the district attorney. This is consistent with constitutional and adult criminal code provisions. It's important that we clarify victims' rights so that citizens are aware of their rights and that they may participate fully in the criminal justice process. Mr. Speaker, colleagues, I hope you'll support passage of this bill as part of the larger effort to ensure compliance with crime victims' rights in Oregon. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? See none. Representative Reed, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
He does not. Those who are opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Representative Beyer? Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer votes aye. Representative Holvey votes aye. House Bill 2127A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2133, relating to post-conviction proceedings.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2133A. Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2133 comes from the judiciary by unanimous vote. This measure allows the filing of late petitions for appeals of circuit court denials of post-conviction relief petitions if the lateness is not the fault of the petitioner. Generally, a notice of appeal by a criminal defendant or post-conviction petition must be filed within 30 days after the entry of judgment in circuit court. ORS 138.0714, which applies to appeals filed by criminal defendants, allows the appellate court to accept a late notice of appeal if the defendant was not personally at fault for filing a notice of appeal, the defendant shows that there is a colorable claim of error to review the appeal, and the notice of appeal is filed within 90 days after entry of the judgment. The Post-Conviction Hearing Act, however, does not contain a similar provision that allows the appellate court to accept a late notice of appeal filed by the petitioner in a post-conviction proceeding. House Bill 2133 provides that an appeal by the state from judgment granting post-conviction relief automatically stays the effect of the judgment. It requires a successful post-conviction petitioner to serve the prospector and the original trial court with a copy of judgment granting relief. There was no opposition to the bill, and the bill was supported by the Department of Justice.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Krieger, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Tomei, how do you vote? Tomei votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. And Representative Dingfelder votes aye. House Bill 2133A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2218, relating to workers' compensation.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2218A. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2218A is the Workmen's Compensation Division Regulatory Streamlining Bill, introduced in conjunction with the Office of Regulatory Streamlining. The bill eliminates three functions administered by the Workmen's Compensation Division and also enables the director to be more efficiently address managed care organization performance issues. This bill deletes the requirement that the department adopt temporary rules to determine a workman's permanent disability when the workman's disability is not addressed by the disabling rate standard. Instead, the bill allows the director to include determination of the worker's impairment in an order on reconsideration, which can be appealed to a hearings division of the Workman's Compensation Board. It also eliminates the requirement the director consult physicians if requested when determining whether to approve the workman's additional charge to an attending physician. It also consolidates into one section the law where the insurer can deny a lump sum permanent disability award and removes the director from the process of automatically reviewing all denied lump sum payments, allows the director to issue civil penalties against managed care organization that failed to comply with the laws or administrative rules. Currently, the only way a director can address a managed care organization's performance is to revoke or suspend the organization's certification. The Workmen's Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee, MLAC, has reviewed this bill and also supports it. I ask for a yay vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Esquivel, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nathanson, for what purpose do you arise?
I'd like to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Please go ahead and state your potential conflict for the record.
A member of my household is employed by a workers' compensation insurance company.
Your potential conflict is duly noted. Representative Garrod, for what purpose do you rise?
To declare a potential conflict.
Please go ahead and state your conflict for the record.
My wife works for Workman's Comp.
It is duly noted. Any other conflicts? Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? She votes aye. House Bill 2218A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2221, relating to discount medical plans and declaring an emergency.
Question now arise on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2221A. Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2221A comes to us from the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and it passed unanimously out of the Consumer Protection Committee. This bill addresses the problem of something called discount medical cards, which you may have seen advertised either in print or heard about on the radio. Medical discount plans are currently available, and the sellers of these plans assert that they enable the purchaser to obtain medical services at reduced fees from participating doctors, hospitals, and other providers. The consumer then pays a monthly fee as well as a non-refundable one-time enrollment fee, which can be as high as a couple hundred dollars. Now, the problem with this set is that in some cases, the consumers have not received the services they paid for. They've been provided with some inadequate and misleading information. For example, these discount cards have been advertised as insurance. In fact, there's one that we saw that was called a health plan, and then at the bottom it said, I am interested in other insurance. So the consumers are being led to believe that this is insurance that they're getting, but in fact it's not. And because it's not insurance, it's not regulated by the insurance division. So this bill has a solution. It gives the Department of Consumer and Business Services authority to regulate these plans. It requires a license from DCBS for people who are selling these cards. Importantly, it requires a written contract between the provider and the actual service provider. In addition to requiring the license, has several consumer protections. For example, a free look period so that the consumer who's purchasing this plan has a 30-day right to cancel. The provider of the medical discount plan is required to have a toll-free customer assistance phone number. There's some requirements regarding refunds. There's some advertising restrictions, which are pretty important. For example, they can't use terms that imply that this is insurance, and they can't say that the state has reviewed the plan. It has to have some disclosure requiring that. Disclosures need to be in at least 12-point type. This provides for the Attorney General to bring in action at the request of DCBS, and it also provides a consumer right of action similar to what can be brought under our State Unlawful Trade Practices Act. This will address a problem in our consumer protection area, and I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? See none. Representative Bonamici, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those are opinion. The bill should pass. Vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Boquist, how do you vote? Representative Boquist? Votes aye. Representative Olson, votes aye. Representative Bonamici, votes aye. And Representative Dallum? Representative Dallum votes aye. House Bill 2221A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2224, relating to insurance policy forms and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2224A. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2224A permits the Department of Consumer and Business Services to specify categories of insurance in which individual policy forms may be reviewed by the Interstate Insurance Product Regulation Commission. We needed plain talk for that one, or other multi-state review process. The Department of Consumer and Business Services must adopt rules to designate categories of insurance and ensure the multi-state process provides the same or better protections than those currently in state law. Good bill should pass. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, in committee I had a little bit of a problem with this bill, and that was because it's my feeling that this gives up a bit of our state's rights to regulate insurance. And I did vote it out of committee, and I will be voting yes, and I wanted to just give you an explanation of that. This is basically a pilot project. We're not signing on to the compact yet. We're trying it out to see if it's going to work the way we want it to before we sign on. And I was convinced by DCBS that the people that they now have working on these regulations could be better used on some more direct consumer affairs problems. So I'm going to be voting yes, but I wanted to give you that explanation. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Nelson. She does not wish to close. Those of opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Galizio, how do you vote? Representative Galizio, how do you vote? Galizio votes aye. Representative Cameron, for what purpose do you rise?
A vote from a yay to no, please.
So observed. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? How are you supposed to? Representative Jet votes aye. Wisnett votes aye. Representative Jensen votes aye. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Representative Nolan votes aye. House Bill 2224A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, what is the next bill?
House Bill 2244, relating to permanent partial disability awards and workers' compensation claims.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2244A. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, colleagues. House Bill 2244A eliminates the sunset on permanent partial disability benefits under workers' compensation. Permanent partial disability benefits are benefits which are awarded to injured workers when they have some kind of permanent injury that results in disability due to an on-the-job injury. The 2003 legislature changed how permanent partial disability benefits are calculated in workers' comp claims, and then the 2005 legislature made further changes to the PPD laws. A sunset of January 1, 2008 was placed on both of these changes. So this bill would repeal the sunset and make the permanent partial disability laws permanent. As required by the 2005 legislation, the Department of Consumer and Business Services conducted a study to determine the impact of the two law changes. That study showed that PPD benefits have been redistributed from workers that are able to return to work more quickly towards workers with longer-term injuries and more disability. This is consistent with the policy goals that were intended by the Management Labor Advisory Committee when it recommended the statutory changes in 2003 and 2005. That same study also showed that the law changes were cost neutral within the overall workers' compensation system. While individual workers' permanent partial disability benefits are affected by the laws, the study data did not demonstrate a significant difference in overall cost impact to the system. MLAC, the Management Labor Advisory Committee, supports repealing the sunset on the permanent partial disability law and making the law changes permanent. To ensure that the law changes continue to operate as expected, this bill would require MLAC to biennially study and make recommendations about permanent partial disability benefits. Colleagues, I'm especially pleased to bring this bill to you because when I served on the Management Labor Advisory Committee and this sunset was in effect, it really forced injured workers to constantly come back and establish a need for increases in their benefits. So this will now make that a part of the law, something that they don't have to continue to fight to just stay where they are. I would urge you to vote aye on House Bill 2244A, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? See none. Representative, do you wish to close? She does not. Those of opinion, the bill should pass. Oh, Representative Nathanson. Further discussion?
I need to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Please go ahead and state your potential conflict for the record.
A member of my family works for Workers' Compensation Insurance Company.
Your potential conflict is duly noted. Further discussion? Representative Garrod.
Same thing. Declare a conflict.
Please go ahead and state it.
My wife works for Workman's Comp.
Duly noted for the record. Other discussion? Seeing none. Those of opinion that House Bill 2244A should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser votes aye. Representative Lim votes aye. House Bill 2244A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2256, relating to payment of wages.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2256A. Representative Patty Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today I bring you House Bill 2256A, which passed the House Business and Labor Committee unanimously. Electronic banking has provided employers with convenient and flexible methods of issuing wages, such as direct deposit and the emerging practice of using electronic payment devices, such as a debit card, for the payment of wages. The Federal Reserve Board recently estimated that more than 2.2 million workers nationwide have chosen to receive their pay through an electronic pay card. However, current Oregon law does not clearly authorize this type of paycheck arrangement. A growing number of employers in Oregon are interested in using electronic payment devices for many reasons, such as decreasing the total number of paper paychecks, giving employees who do not have a bank or credit union account the ability to receive their wages without having to pay to cash the paper check, reducing the amount of banking fees for their business. House Bill 2256A codifies the practice of using electronic payment devices in lieu of paper paychecks. Under the measure, the card can be used only if both the employer and the employee agree for wages to be paid in this fashion, so it's strictly voluntary. The device must be accessible to employees in the county where they live or work, and the employee can obtain an initial withdrawal of his or her entire net wages without a fee. This bill has the support of Oregon Association of Nurseries, the Farm Bureau, and the Oregon Association of Industries. These groups see this bill as a means of providing employers a convenient method of paying their employees by taking advantage of new forms of electronic banking. I urge your support.
Further discussion? Seeing none. Representative Smith, do you wish to close?
I do, Mr. Speaker.
Please.
This bill should pass.
This bill should pass. All right. Those are opinion. The bill should pass. We'll vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kotak, how do you vote? Kotak votes aye. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Roblin votes aye. Representative Bonamici votes aye. House Bill 2256A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, will read the next bill.
House Bill 2385, relating to self-insurance for purposes of financial responsibility requirements and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2385A. Representative Kump.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2385 was recommended by the Oregon Law Commission and passed unanimously out of the Judiciary Committee on March 26th. This bill meets the approval of all the involved stakeholders, including the plaintiff's bar, the defense bar, the insurance companies, and the rental car companies. The primary purpose of this bill is to fill a hole in the automobile insurance statutes. Under current law, if someone is in an accident with a self-insured car, and these are generally rental cars, driven by somebody without insurance, the person may have no recourse. That is, they cannot recover from their own uninsured policy because the self-insured car, try saying that a couple times, is never an uninsured car under the statutes. They cannot recover from the negligent driver of the rental car if he or she is judgment-proof, and they cannot recover from the owner of the self-insured car because the rental car company is not required under law to insure permissive users. In other words, if you are unlucky enough to get into an accident with someone who is driving a rental car and is uninsured, you may have no recourse. To make matters worse, there is no way under current law to buy an insurance policy for such a situation. House Bill 2385 corrects this problem by requiring self-insured, that's rental car companies, to pay liability damages when a driver does not have the required insurance. If the driver has insurance, the driver pays and not the self-insured vehicle owner. Thus, the self-insured will not be liable often. Also, the self-insured is only obligated to pay the minimum limits required under the financial responsibility law, just like non-insureds. The bill also specifically provides that the self-insured owner can go after the driver if the self-insured has to pay. If the damages are more than the minimal limits required under the financial responsibility law, the victim can go to their own policy to be made whole. The bill specifies that, one, self-insured vehicle owners are not required to provide liability coverage to a secondary user if the self-insured does not consent to that person's use of the vehicle. The self-insured's uninsured motorist coverage is excess to other available insurance. And three, the bill is not intended to limited liability provisions under ORS 30135. To summarize, it does not appear that the legislature ever intended this gap in the law. That is, while allowing for persons and businesses with over 25 cars to self-insure, the legislature appears to have intended to require self-insured to have meaningful coverage at all times. Other states also required self-insureds to cover permissive drivers. In short, it seems the legislature intended for all vehicles on the road to have the same minimum coverage, and this bill fills the gap that currently exists for self-insured. With that, Mr. Speaker, I close.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Kump, do you wish to close?
No, good bill should pass.
Those are opinion that House Bill 2385A should pass. We'll vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Buckley votes aye. House Bill 2385A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2487, relating to warehouse licenses.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2487. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2487 comes to you from your Business and Labor Committee with a unanimous do-pass recommendation. The bill corrects an oversight in our state laws regarding the distribution of wine by licensed wine warehouses. To understand the benefit of the bill, you must understand that not all wineries are the same. There are two types. The first type of winery grows its own grapes and produces wine on site. The second type grows its own grapes but does not produce the wine on site. The wine is produced by a second party, but be assured, it's Oregon wine. It's all excellent wine. Under current law, only the first type of winery can have a licensed wine warehouse deliver the product to the retailer, such as a wine shop or a restaurant. The second type of winery is left with the burden of delivering its own product to licensed retailers. House Bill 2487 makes it so that wine warehouses can deliver the second type of winery's product to a licensed retailer. This bill would also allow private label wine, wine that is sold under a different label than the winery that produced it, to be delivered by wine warehouses. It's a good bill, helps our wine industry. Please vote aye.
Further discussion? Representative Cameron.
Rise to declare a conflict of interest, Mr. Speaker.
Please go ahead and state your conflict for the record.
I have a family member who's a licensed distributor for OLCC.
Duly noted. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Berger, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those of opinion that House Bill 2487 should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Minnis, how do you vote? Minnis votes aye. Representative Richardson votes aye. Representative Shields, how do you vote? He votes aye. House Bill 2487, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2508, relating to photo red light.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2508A. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this bill has to do with the red light cameras that enforce our traffic control devices. In December, my wife and I were driving in Beaverton. I approached the light as it was changing and figured out quickly that I could stop safely, which I did. I watched the light cycle through, and when my light turned green and cross traffic had stopped, I waited until the other traffic had stopped because we know people run those lights. I then pulled out, and a person in the middle lane came flying through and T-boned us. And it was another reminder about the people running red lights in Oregon. We've had red light cameras in Oregon for some time now, but they've been restricted to larger cities and restricted to the amount of intersections that they can be placed on. This year, the committee and the judiciary looked at this bill, and we removed the population limits on a city so that any city could, if they wished, put one of these devices on, and they could put them on as many intersections as they would like to put them on. The bill eliminates those. Some of the other things, there was a requirement that the cities report back to the legislature, and that was kind of redundant, so we dropped that as well. What experience has shown us that on intersections where these lights are set up, in Portland, for example, and in Beaverton, which is in my district, traffic accidents were reduced dramatically once those got in place and people knew about them. And they don't give you a ticket for running a yellow light. The light has to be red before you enter the intersection, before it will take a photo of your car, and then the city would issue you a ticket. It's a good bill, and I would like your vote. I vote on this.
Further discussion, Representative Galizio.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Does carrier yield?
Carrier does.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. I just want to give a scenario, and if you could tell me what would happen in this case. So if you're driving through you're approaching an intersection with one of these photo red lights, and somebody is tailgating you pretty aggressively, which happens sometimes, and your judgment, because you have a kid in the back seat, is that, you know what, it's going to be safer if I kind of put my foot on the gas and just kind of try to squeak through. In that case, you get caught by the red light camera, what happens then?
If you were to receive a citation, you could take that mitigating evidence to the judge and to go to court and explain to the judge. And again, this light is red before you enter the intersection, in which case your child in the back seat may be the victim of a broadside from somebody proceeding through a green light. So,
okay. Thank you. Follow-up or another question, please, of the carrier?
Additional question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Carrier does.
He does.
Who calibrates these machines, and what's the length of the yellow or amber light?
The yellow light depends on the intersection, the kind of highway it is, and the city set that. The companies that install the equipment calibrate them to match that, and then it's checked periodically to be sure that it's set so that it does not take a car before they enter the intersection. And as an example of that, the city of Newburgh has these lights, and if you were to get a citation for running a red light, they send you the still picture showing you as the driver, and then they give you a website where you can go and actually see yourself run the red light late, and they showed several examples of that. We saw people have near misses and also collisions for running the red light late.
Thank you. Another question to the carrier?
Another question. Does the carrier yield?
He does.
Is there police review of these tickets? In other words, my understanding is there's a company, a private or public company, that generates profit by selling to municipalities. And are those the people that do the analysis and then issue the ticket? Is there police review?
The company they sets up the equipment. As I understand it, the film, it's digital, of course, goes to the city where they review it and then either send a ticket or don't. And it depends on the quality of the photograph that would show the license plate clearly and the driver clearly.
Thank you. To the bill?
To the bill.
I thank the representative from Beaverton, Aloha. And I just want to explain why I'm going to oppose this bill. I don't oppose the idea in terms of reducing the number for this, you know, what size of the city. I just oppose this, the idea as a whole. I think we shouldn't have these for several reasons. I think number one is in this first scenario where you make a judgment based on safety that it's safer for you, and you don't know exactly how long that yellow light's going to be there. You make a decision and you get caught by that photo red light, then you are guilty in the eyes of the city. So it reverses presumption. You're now guilty, and you have to you're guilty until proven innocent. The burden is placed upon you as the driver, you as a citizen, to prove that you were indeed innocent. I think that's problematic. Secondly, these are companies, private and public companies, that generate profit from having these installed. So they have a financial interest to catch as many people as possible, and you have to question whether or not the technology is being administered and checked and calibrated in a way that is fair to the driver. Secondly, I think this justifies decreased expenditures for public safety officers. Oh, why do we need to fund more public safety officers in the state? We can just use photo radar, photo red light. So I think it decreases justifies a decrease in expenditures for public safety officers. It also sets a precedent for this surveillance society. How about photo radar on the freeway? This is the logical extension of where we're going. I don't see. Although I've seen some of you driving in the left lane and going I-5 about 75 or 80, you probably wouldn't like that one. Bottom line is, I think the idea is for public safety, and I understand that. I'm just concerned that we've got private companies with a financial interest. You're guilty until proven innocent, and
the calibration and the effectiveness of this technology, I think, is questionable. And I would point to one study that was done by North Carolina State University's Transportation Institute, and they concluded that after extensive analysis, that 18 red light cameras that were in use in Greensboro may actually cause more accidents rather than fewer, and there was no evidence that they were effective as told. So I would urge your opposition. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. I'd just like to extend my thanks to the Judiciary Committee for finally getting a little more realistic as far as the size of the population of the city. I've felt always something of a second-class citizen coming from a city that wasn't big enough in the wisdom of the legislative body to be able to have a photo radar or photo red light in my city or cities in the district. That is not to say that I'm either opponent or proponent of the photo red light. Merely, I'm not sure why it was ever necessary to discriminate against a city of one size. It, after all, is the city's, or should be the city's determination of whether they need these types of things, not the legislature, I would submit. And for the my good friend and the representative from Tigard, I'm not sure about the wisdom of the Senate or the House Judiciary Committee, but I do happen to have compliments of a constituent, a bill in the House Judiciary Committee that will call for photo radar on the freeway. So bear with us a little bit. It may be coming, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
Thank you, sir. Just for clarification, because in our summary, this reads that it allows cities with population over 10,000 to operate cameras. I believe the bill eliminates that size restriction. Is that correct?
That is. Thank you for that question. That is correct. That was a misprint. We eliminated both the population restriction and the number of intersections restriction, leaving it a permissible issue to the jurisdictions involved.
Thank you. To the motion. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. And with respect to the good representative from District 58, the land of loaves and fishes, I agree with you that we cannot be discriminating against the smaller cities in our communities. I would like to encourage your support of this bill. I have a plea from the Newport City Council to allow this to happen, followed with the strong support of the Chief of Police. We have an intersection in Newport that involves a state highway and a very popular crossroadway that many of the residents use. And that state highway happens to come downhill, down Highway 20 into Newport. It is notorious for people running that red light. It is very difficult to patrol. And I have lived in fear of an accident at that intersection, a serious accident, for a long time. So I urge your support for this bill. And you might, when we pass it, use some caution when you enter the city of Newport from Highway 20.
Representative Lim.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would the carrier yield the questions?
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield? He does.
Yes, he does. Thank you, Mr. President. I need information about public information campaign. How long do they have to have a public information campaign? A month or 2 months, 3 months?
We didn't set that. It'd be up to the city, you know, whatever they want to do. They do have to have a notice. They have to have it signed warning people that the intersection is photo red light. There's a sign. Beaverton has those big signs up right in front of the intersection.
Okay. Additional questions?
Additional question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Carrier does.
He does.
So actually, it doesn't address public information, education, maybe a month or 2 months through the newspaper, media, that the red light will be certain places. It doesn't talk about anything at all.
It doesn't require that, and the reason we didn't do that, Representative, is because you're not supposed to run red lights, and so we assume that the driver would know that already and not just choose which intersections to violate.
Okay. Additional questions?
One more question to the carrier?
Yes, I certainly.
He does yield.
Thank you very much for yielding my question. And how much will it cost to install that red light cameras?
The red light cameras are done through a lease with the cities, and so it's up to the city to decide that they negotiate that. And there were some intersections in Porter where actually the city lost money, but they didn't mind doing that because they reduced violations and accidents at that intersection. So it would be up to the city. If the city would take a look at the financial, for example, Gresham might say, should we put in a light? They'd call the company. The company would say it would cost this much, and then Gresham would decide if it was worthwhile to put it in or not.
Clarification?
Clarification?
Yes.
Yes.
Carrier
how
yields?
How much is the actual cost to put it up? The
I don't know that.
Oh, you don't know
sorry.
That. Okay. Thank you. And then all right, to the bill.
To the bill.
I think it's a reasonably good bill, but I want to make sure, I just want to comment that the comment made by the representative from the Tiger that there are no photo radar in freeway. And of course, this is not a freeway bill, but we want to make sure that the no photo radar in the freeway. I'm sure this will reduce the accident. I don't believe this will increase the accident. This will reduce the accident. And also, this will save lives. So this is a good bill. I'm willing to support it.
Further discussion, Representative Escobar.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, we have this in Medford. It's been very successful. It's not a moneymaker. You cannot get a citation unless you break the plane and the light is red. That's the only time you can get a citation. It is reviewed by our police department. It is forwarded from the company that administers the cameras. The good thing about it is we have it in four intersections. We have enough cameras for two intersections, and the great thing is people learn, so they slow down even if there isn't a camera there. It's a good policy to have. It saves you manpower or woman power, whatever you want to call it, the police department. They, in turn, do not have to sit and babysit these high traffic intersections. Salem really needs this, because if you go through an intersection here in Salem, you see people going through yellow and red lights quite frequently. This will, trust me, deter people from doing this in the future. But more importantly, the results are great. If you have even shaded windows, that will take your picture and it will show you driving that vehicle. It will also show your license plate. It will also show your car. And it will also show the status of the green light or the red light in your direction. Good bill.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this bill is an issue of local control. The legislature does not need to tell local communities if they should or should not have photo radar. As some of you know, I was the mayor of Milwaukee, and as we saw our funding for city police go down, 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 as I bet has happened in most of our communities, we decided that this is exactly what we needed. We could not do it because the legislature, Big Brother, had decided that it wasn't necessary. Colleagues, it is necessary. We need to give the local communities the right to make a decision about what is best for their city, for their county, for their community. This is not a situation where Big Brother and Big Sister needs to tell local communities what they can and cannot do. This is a good bill, should pass. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. Question to the carrier.
I do.
I assume he yields.
Question of the carrier, he yields.
I yield.
All right. Thank you. As far as people driving vehicles not owned by them or, say, company vehicles, what's the procedure for that? How does the flow of paperwork go on that?
If you were to loan me your car and I was to run through a red light and get my picture taken, they would send the ticket would come to you with the photograph, and all you would need to do is send a copy of your picture on your license and presumably your husband's if both were registered. Say, this is not us. Send it back in. The court dismisses the citation.
Follow-up question?
Is Kerry real? He does?
He does.
All right. So this would also apply to, say, company vehicles, and you wouldn't be passing a ticket on to the employee, or would you?
I'm not absolutely sure about that. I believe if it was a company vehicle, they would send it to the company and ask the employee if it still worked there for you to hand it, I believe. But I'm not certain.
I see. Okay. Thank you. Thank
you. Okay. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Just to clarify a couple of the concerns that we heard in the committee. First of all, I hold in my hand an 11-page guideline dated 2004 from the Oregon Department of Transportation. This gives cities guidelines that they have to follow to implement these things. There is a substantial obstacles that they have to go through. These are very expensive pieces of equipment. There's a lot of study. To answer Representative Galizio's question about notification, or I think somebody brought up notification, it requires that they notify people, all the steps that are in here. This is about safety. This is not about catching people doing things wrong. It's about protecting the public. And it does not eliminate the due process of law that you're still able to do and go through the court process if you, in fact, have a situation that you want to appeal to a judge. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does Gary yield?
Yes, he does.
He does.
Civil bill.
If two or more small cities join together to have these lights, are they going to be referred to as red light district?
One could only hope so, Representative.
Thank you for the answer.
Representative Butler.
Follow that. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does Kerry yield?
I'm ready for anything.
He's ready.
Representative, I'm sorry I didn't get to you with these questions previously, but I need to ask a few questions relative to, number one, are the cameras that are shooting the pictures, are they manned cameras or are they automatic?
Those are automatic cameras that are set on the intersections, and they're set on each side, so it takes a picture of the front and back of your vehicle to be sure you get the license plate.
Follow-up question.
Follow-up question, do you yield?
I do.
Carrier does.
You mentioned in your testimony just a few moments ago in response to another question that the pictures are sent out to the registration, the registered vehicle owner, and then that registered vehicle owner says, that's not my picture, that is my picture, or that's my daughter's picture, I guess. Can you give us some better feel of how that works?
Okay. If the car is registered to you and your wife and your daughter is driving it, and they send you the picture, you just need to send back and say, that is not us. And if the car be registered to you and your wife, you would send a copy of your driver's license photo into the court. The court would dismiss it. And if I may back up just a hair on that, I learned from Representative Bruhn in response to Representative Thatcher's question, if a company gets a citation, they say, you know, this is a company vehicle. You're responsible for that unless you have the employee, identify the employee. So in a company, it's different than in a personal registration.
Follow-up question?
Follow-up question, do you yield?
I do.
Carry it up.
Did your committee have any discussion with regard to the digital versus the wet photo technology and the success of this particular type of technology that's being used with these unmanned cameras?
The unmanned cameras use digital. They don't use wet film. and they're successful. The cities in Oregon that I talked to, or the representatives who are down here from, like them.
Follow-up question? Additional question?
Additional question to the carrier. Do you yield?
I do.
He does.
Was there any discussion about the cost of these particular units and how much the lease cost is, or whether they're outright owned by the community, the service cost, the download, the inspection costs, or the cost of being able to actually tie into the state license, the DMV and the state license pictures?
Okay, thank you for that question. They don't tie into the state DMV. They're already, most cities through the police already have that set up. But what this does is allow the city, for example, if Baker City wanted to do this, they would contact the company and they would drop their own contract, so it could cut, the cost would depend on the contract. But in all the cases I know of, the cameras are leased through the company.
Follow-up question?
Follow-up question, does Carrier yield?
He does.
Carrier does.
Did they talk about the lease cost and the cost, the payment cost back to the lease companies for each successful ticket, tickets written, and those kinds of things?
I don't believe we had actual testimony on that.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Speaker, I move that House Bill 2508A be referred to the Committee on Transportation.
Representative Butler has moved that House Bill 2508A be referred back to the Committee on Transportation. To your motion.
Thank you. Colleagues, in the Committee on Transportation, we have a number of these bills. We have worked on them very diligently. We have some excellent, batch of activities that we are working on presently that give us some indication that various technologies actually work or do not work. My concern is that we're doing quite a lot of information and finding out that certain leases and cost per unit, that this is in effect in some instances, particularly the digital technology. We have testimony, pretty good testimony on record, of the digital technology versus the wet technology, that one form of technology works while the other is only about 40% successful. And this is from the experts. And therefore, I believe that, and in addition, we also have information relative to the cost of each of these various kinds of things and who gets paid, who is reimbursed on these kinds of tickets that are written, as well as the ability to tie actually back in directly to the DMV and how much that can save a local community. And so, Mr. Chair, I would encourage a vote to move this to a committee where other similar bills are being heard and other similar bills can all be combined, so that we know that we're doing this the correct way for the benefit of all of Oregon.
Further discussion on the motion to refer the bill back to committee? Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm rising as chair of the Judiciary Committee where this bill was considered and brought out to this floor.
To the motion?
To the motion.
Okay.
I appreciate the comments from my good colleague and the perspectives from the Transportation Committee. I think it's important to understand that this bill is not a general consideration of the technology of photo red light. It is simply extending what is already in Oregon statute on photo red light so that it can be used by smaller cities that are now allowed under the law, and that those cities who are restricted in the number of intersections they can conduct it at have that restriction lifted. It is not a general policy debate about whether photo red light is an appropriate technology and how it's administered. Just recognize it's a narrow bill. It's a public safety bill. It was properly considered in the Judiciary Committee. My good colleague, who's the carrier of the bill from the committee, I think has done a good job of explaining the public safety dimension of this. People may have philosophical differences about whether they like photo traffic enforcement technology, and I think those are reasonable matters for people to come to their own conclusion about. But this bill is a narrow bill about how, what cities will be permitted to use a technology that is already permitted under Oregon law. And I would urge a no vote on this motion because I think it's properly on this floor from the Judiciary Committee. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, as the Chair of the House Transportation Committee, I want to let you know that I do think that this bill has been worked well in the Judiciary Committee. I'm not sure that we could add anything more, and I do think this is a bill that is a personal choice, and you should be able to make that choice here. So I would recommend we not send the bill back. To Transportation Committee.
Further discussion? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request the rules be suspended and unanimous consent be granted for a Republican caucus.
Representative Scott requests a recess. Did you say 15 minutes?
No, he didn't say anything.
That will be plenty.
How much time would you like?
10 minutes.
A 10-minute recess for purposes of a Republican caucus. Is there objection? Representative Hunt?
Based on the time, I guess I have a question in terms of parliamentary procedure. Is there any way that we can adjourn until tomorrow with the motion that's on the floor, or do we have to act on the motion on the floor first?
House Senators. Okay. House, come to order. President Hunt had the floor and had inquired, but he had not made a motion to adjourn. And Representative Hunt, are you done with the floor? I will now call upon Representative Scott. Okay. Representative Scott, you need to withdraw your motion to recess because it has a higher priority, and then we can take your motion to table.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I withdraw the request for a caucus.
Okay, and the appropriate motion, just so I help you here, is... would be to make the motion on the floor, which is a motion to refer to the Committee on Transportation, House Bill 2508A, a special order of business tomorrow. First order of business tomorrow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that we make the motion to refer this to committee, send it over to a first order of business tomorrow for a date certain of 10:30 or after 10:35 tomorrow. First order of business.
Representative Scott moves that the motion to refer House Bill 2508A to the Committee on Transportation be made the first item of business under special orders of business tomorrow. All those in favor will say aye. All those opposed, no. The motion is adopted. Chair requests that all bills remaining upon today's third reading of House Bill's calendar be carried over to the third reading of House Bill's calendar of Wednesday, April 11th, 2007, without objection. Is there objection? Seeing none, those bills are carried over. Colleagues, we do have quite a bit of business we have to run through very quickly, so we need your full attention. We are now under final reading, memorials, and resolutions. The chair requests unanimous consent the rules be suspended in consideration of HCR 12 be made a special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Wednesday, April 25th, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The chair requests that the memorial remaining upon today's final reading memorials and resolution calendar be carried over to its proper place tomorrow, Wednesday, April 11, 2007. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Bills, reports, and other business line on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 5 relating to legislative committee. Senate Bill 697 related to property taxes. Senate Bill 734 relating to insurance of stock and certain financial institutions.
Bills read first time or passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bill. Chair requests that the Senate bills remaining on today's third reading of Senate bills calendar be carried over to their proper place on Wednesday, April 11, 2007. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House? Other business of the Senate? Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Hunt.
Democrats will caucus promptly at 12:15.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Republicans, grab your lunch, come to the caucus room.
Further announcements? Remonstrances. Adjournment. Representative Jensen, 10 o'clock, Wednesday, April 11, 2007.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10 a.m. Wednesday, April 11th, 2007.
Representative Jensen moves the House adjourn until 10 a.m. Wednesday, April 11th, 2007. Without objection, the House is adjourned.